heart's breaking and I don't know what to do. Thought we were going strong, thought we were holding on, aren't we?
Mental Health Week. This is Walk in My Shoes Radio, broadcasting live from St. Patrick's Mental Health Services, Dublin 8.
I wondered maybe they'd never find me. I've been waiting such a long, long, long time to feel it, swallowed by the waters around me. I know I took so many wrong, wrong, wrong turns to see it. Blisters at night, and I laughed till I cried and cried. I ran till my feet couldn't run no more, and I sat till my lungs were burning, till I know I'm alive, alive. I sit till I can't hear your voice no more. Suddenly the sun flies just zipping right where I'm standing. The sunlight cut into the bone, bone, bone. Start the healing. Oh, I danced through the blisters at night, and I laughed till I cried and cried. I ran till my feet couldn't run no more, and I sat till my lungs were burning, till I know I'm alive, alive. I sat till I can't hear your voice no more.
good.
So Ireland's only pop-up radio station is back. We started at 7 o'clock on Monday morning, and this is Walk In My Shoes Radio, promoting positive mental health on walkinmyshoes.ie. And my next guest this afternoon is Karen Dempsey. Karen has been a nurse, you've worked with Aer Lingus, you're a psychotherapist, and perhaps kind of most exciting of everything, you're also an interfaith minister.
That's right.
So, Karen, there's so much there. I think we'll go back to the start. So tell us about how you started in nursing, and we'll take your journey from there.
Okay. What a journey, actually, it was. I started nursing when I was 17 years old. When I was in school, I went to Lourdes when I was about 15 with the Order of Malta, and I decided, oh, this is it, I want to be a nurse. So I volunteered for summers, I put my mind to it totally, got into nursing, but I was very, very young. I was 17, which meant that I was 20 when I qualified. Again, still very, very young. And I'd seen an awful lot in those 3 years that personally I wouldn't probably wish a 17-year-old of my own to have seen. So I came out the other side and I went into Aer Lingus. That was kind of the impetus for me going, oh my God, life is so serious and I've seen so much of all this. Aer Lingus gave me a breather in terms of I was clean when I came to the end of a shift. In nursing, you know, you end a shift and God only knows
I'm sure
what you've seen that day. But
and you got to see part of the world working with Aer Lingus, no doubt.
Well, I did, but not a whole lot. I only lasted 6 months in Aer Lingus because it all sounded great at the beginning. But really, you get to see airports.
Okay,
I got to see.
Fair enough.
And hospitals and airports apparently are the two most stressful places on earth for a human to be.
You're joking.
So I didn't know that either till I came through and I realised, oh, I'm very at home in these really, really stressful places. But we don't need that level of stress in our lives.
No, well, if you have... Well, listen, you have so many talents because you could reinvent yourself and you have another career. So you're now a psychotherapist. Now, you'll have to tell me a bit about the branch that you are involved in. It's a new one on me.
Synthesis?
Yeah, I hadn't heard of that before, Karen.
Yeah, well, I suppose I've heard the saying once that life makes sense in hindsight. So when you look back on your life, the decisions you've made all made sense, even though they mightn't make a whole lot of sense at the time. So as we sit here talking, and I'm gone back to when I started nursing, one of the things was back then, I remember I was very involved in the clinical side of the human body and everything was clinical and how all of our systems work together. And even at that young age, I had a sense that, oh, there's more to this than just physical illnesses and ailments. When I left nursing, well, when I finished first and was with Aer Lingus, I also worked part-time with the Hospice Foundation as the night nurse for the home nursing service. So for the last 7 nights of somebody's life, I would go to their home and look after them. So I dealt a lot with death at that stage. And that was where I started thinking, God, there really is something more here. So I went from looking after the body into looking after the mind. And that brought me into the psychotherapy side of things. But the type of psychotherapy that I did, what drew me to that was it had a very strong emphasis on the spiritual aspect of the person. So it wasn't just about the body or the mind, it was actually about this third aspect, which I had never really seen get much attention, which was the spiritual side of the person. And that's not to say religious, it really, really isn't religious. It's about the part of us that connects to the world at large, to other people in the world, to nature, to the something more, whatever that might be for us as an individual. And for me, I found that I could really work with people in a very different way from that aspect. Because I think in Ireland in particular, we're a very spiritual nation. It's in our blood and in our bones to be connected to nature and some form of spirituality. But we have had such a painful disconnection from the church that there isn't really anywhere to put that. So I found that in my therapy room, that began to come in a lot more about people feeling disconnected and they weren't quite sure why. And when we started to explore that kind of soul, spiritual side of things, without using those words, it came up a lot more.
So what kind of clients then do you help?
Most of my clients are young women. Again, another step into the psychotherapy side of things was when I was working in the Rotunda, I was working on the gynae ward, which is where women come in the first 24 weeks of pregnancy, which would be before a pregnancy is termed viable. So in general, if you find yourself in the gynae ward when you're pregnant, something has gone quite wrong very often. So it was a lot of women who were having miscarriages, stillbirths, fertility issues, terminations, things like that. I mean, in Ireland, I know we have a complicated issue there, but women are women, and they were showing, women would show up to the rotunda for all sorts of care.
Yeah.
And what I found there was, in terms of spirituality, these are women of my own age who didn't really have much reason a lot of the time to have reflected deeply on what they believed in or what their own personal beliefs or spiritual beliefs were. So I found myself on night duty having these deep conversations with women about I remember one woman in particular, she had just lost her baby, and she said, I was pregnant, I've got four babies, my youngest is 11, this one was completely unexpected, I didn't think I was particularly attached, but now that I'm losing my baby, her words were, I never thought I believed in God, but now I want to know, where's my baby gone? And to me, that made me go, oh my God, I don't know either. I really don't know. And that prompted me to go on the further journey, which was the interfaith ministry training, so that I could have conversations with people about exactly this topic. And I still don't know the answers, but now I'm a lot more comfortable with having these very deep existential conversations about what's it all about for you as an individual, or for me as an individual, or for all of us as
So you people. Are a priestess, am I right?
You could use the word priestess. It's a funny one. I used that a while on social media because it was one of those terms that landed with me. But I think it can be maybe a little bit flippant as well. I'm a minister, so I have the title of Reverend. I can use the title Reverend if I wish.
Okay, I should have introduced you as Reverend.
You could have introduced me as Reverend, but I don't have a big attachment to that because I don't want it to make a statement about who I am or anything like that in terms that I can't explain myself. In Ireland, there's a cultural context to the title Reverend as well, which sounds more Church of Ireland or...
Yes, I suppose.
People have associations with it. To me, it just means I have a reverence for everyone and everything, and that's my approach to life, is with a reverence. And the title, what I do feel it does is it gives me a gravitas in terms of the fact that I've actually committed a lot of my life to studying this type of thing and exploring spirituality.
So
and,
you're a psychotherapist, but you're also... an interfaith minister.
Yes.
So it wouldn't be unusual if I rocked up to a wedding and you were there officiating.
Absolutely not, yeah. And I can legally marry people, so that's a huge advantage. It's a real recognition of the role of this whole new role in Irish society, that it used to be that you had to have a priest or you had to have a registrar. So it was either completely religious or completely not religious. Now there is this huge middle ground where when I meet with a couple, whether it's for a wedding, I'll kind of delve down with them into what is their own belief about their particular marriage. There's no right or wrong answer. It's not about marriage as a social construct. It's about what does your marriage mean to you too, both as individuals and as a couple. And then we build it from there. And it's very different for every single couple. And
you strike me as a very positive, you know, upbeat person, Karen. It must be so lovely to be part of a couple's fabulous day. I presume you get great enjoyment out of that.
I do, yeah, I do. And it's amazing I do a wedding, and it's amazing the kind of come down you get after that, because
the couples do as well. You know, there's so much excitement getting everything
but
ready.
But then I leave before the, I don't tend to stay around for the party, so I have this big high of the ceremony, and then I leave and I go home and I cook the dinner and
Karen, you should go to the party.
Well, I do sometimes, but that's the thing, you see. It's different to being a priest because I've got a son, I've got a household to run, I've got, you know, football matches to go to, I've got this really practical life as well that runs alongside the beauty of being a spiritual minister, for people of all denominations. But people do laugh at that because they often say, well, we put you down for the top table. And I was like, oh, no, actually, I have to go to basketball training or whatever it might be.
I presume the marriage referendum has brought a lot more couples to you as well?
It's an interesting question, actually. It hasn't. I think, and I'm really interested in this, at the time of the marriage referendum, I campaigned for that equality referendum big time. It was really important to me that it passed. And one of the objections that was coming up at the time was, oh, there's going to be this big influx of, you know, of gay couples wanting to get married and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I don't know why that would be an objection anyway. But
exactly.
When it came to pass, actually, there wasn't really. And what I found was, of all of the couples that I married, they were together a long time. These were people who were genuinely waiting for an opportunity to marry the person that they love most in their entire lives, and they wanted to do it in a full marriage ceremony. So I really found, I found that so disrespectful to gay couples to think that, you know, there was this notion that people would just run out, meet somebody and get married,
right,
which opposite sex couples do all of the time, and there's no big issue with it. But no, I think, you know, just couples who are together, young couples together, 15, 20 years, and, you know, it was beautiful to be able to work with them when they're
ready. When I look at your career, which seems to be evolving, you know, and gosh, God knows what you'll do next, Karen, there's always a thread of helping people in it.
You
mentioned about hindsight. Looking back, do you know where that streak came from in you? Because you've always wanted to help people as a nurse, Aer Lingus psychotherapist, interfaith minister. Do you know, I mean, that's a lovely gift to have. That's a great talent.
Yeah, I suppose, my family were very much like that as well. I mean, my mother would have been a big helping style person. I remember, though, there was always something about the connection. It's not so much the helping people, it's connecting to people and being meaningful, finding a meaning in what I do. One of the big things that I learned in terms of the helping was, as I grew older, I learned about boundaries, because I used to help too much. If somebody asked me for a favour, I would do it. I would move hell and high water, and I would do it regardless of the consequences to me. And as I got older, I realised you can't sustain that.
Well, you've your own life, Karen.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and other people have their own lives too. They don't need me bounding in there trying to fix things for them.
So we're going to throw to a song. And Karen, give us your website.
Oh,
I might meet you at a wedding.
It's reverendkaren.ie.
So reverendkaren.ie. So we're going to throw to a song. Thanks a million, Karen.
Standing in a crowded room and I can't see her face. Put your arms around me, tell me everything's okay. In my mind, I'm running around a cold and empty space. Just put your arms around me, tell me everything's okay. Break my bones, but you won't see me fall.
This is Walk In My Shoes Radio, encouraging you to get the conversation started this Mental Health Week. I'm just finishing up my chat with Reverend Karen Dempsey. You mentioned your website, so that's reverendkaren.ie.
Correct.
But is there any other way people can get in touch with you if they'd like to, Karen?
Yeah, I have an office beside the Mater in Phibbsborough in the North Circular Clinic. So if people look up the website, they'll get the contact details for that. And the website then covers, I do weddings, funerals, baby namings, any of those sort of ceremonies that people might want, the kind of life milestone ceremonies. So yeah, absolutely, give me a shout.
So the last song actually played, coincidentally, Hold My Hand. You're one of those people, Karen. You're going to hold people's hand.
Absolutely. And I love getting people to hold hands in ceremonies. People get an awful shock when they
listen, hold hands. Oh, that's a lovely thing to hold hands.
It connects people. We don't do it often
power
enough.
Power touch. I'm sure that's been a discussion here this week. If not already, it will be later in the week. So thank you very much, Karen, for dropping in this afternoon.
You,
and continue. Good luck to you with everything.
Thanks a million.
This is Walk In My Shoes Radio, broadcasting live from St. Patrick's Mental Health Services in Dublin 8. And I'm Nuala Carey, here with you until 5 o'clock this evening. And we're now joined by Robert Gill, who works here in St. Patrick's Mental Health Services. And Robert, you're going to talk to us about addiction.
Yeah.
I suppose, firstly, what is addiction?
I guess there's a lot of different things. When we think about addiction, it's such a wide area, and at this stage that it's difficult to define in specific terms. But I suppose some of the things that we think about around addiction will be a loss of control in your life. So you find yourself taking up more time by a particular substance or a particular behaviour. It's becoming more important. There's more of a sense of reward by reward response from the particular substance or behaviour. There's a prevalence, so it's taking up more time in your life. It might be also really difficult to stop, so you might feel really anxious if you stop or you try to stop using the substance or behaviour. And even if you do stop, you might find yourself reverting back to that particular type of substance or behaviour.
And how do you become addicted to something? Because surely at the start it was something you did once or twice, but then so many months later, this is now taking over.
Yeah.
Is that, it has to be a gradual process, I presume?
It's absolutely a gradual process. I don't think anybody, I've worked in the addiction service for a long time here in the hospital, I don't think I've ever met anyone that set out to become dependent on a substance or on a particular behaviour. Most times people might veer towards a particular way of coping. So if you were going through a stressful time in your life, say for instance work stress, family problems, you may find yourself veering towards a substance like alcohol, say for instance, or drugs, as a way of coping with that distress. Also for young people, I suppose, people want to experiment, they want to get out there and have some fun, and experimenting with substances is part of, I guess it's sometimes part of life, it's part of the experience. And especially in our own culture, alcohol is, it has been a very big part of our culture for a long time, so that becomes an opening or a start in the journey to substance.
There are lots of different things you can become addicted to. I suppose I'm thinking of alcohol or maybe drugs. You know, and this might sound silly, but are there some addictions that are worse than others? Because I was watching, say, on TV last night, an RT2 Vogue's programme about anxiousness. They were analysing the amount of time she spent on the phone. One day, I mean, it was something like 7 hours. You know, that's too much to be on your mobile phone. But that's not going to, I think, be as dangerous as being addicted to something else.
Okay.
So is there a stigma about different types of addictions? And
there's absolutely, I think, a stigma across the board. Thinking about particular types of behaviours. I guess there was a time when using huge amounts of alcohol was not stigmatised upon, and it was perfectly normal in society, and then it became a problem over time because of different reasons throughout history. But I guess using your phone excessively isn't really seen as a problem if you're more productive because of technology. But the stigma, I guess, coming back to the idea of stigma in relation to addiction, it's definitely that idea of a mark of disgrace associated with a particular person's behaviour, how they are. The research looks at stigma as one of the most persistent barriers to understanding mental health problems, first of all, but also leading to significant problems like low self-esteem and hopelessness in regard to recovery. The main issues, I guess, is looking at the lack of knowledge that's out there, first of all. So people not fully understanding the information that is available in relation to particular types of mental health problems. So whether that's an addiction or depression or anxiety. Negative attitudes, so maybe a fear or an avoidance of people because of what they're experiencing. And then hostile behaviour, so say for instance not allowing people the opportunity to equal rights that everyone else is entitled to, so that might be not getting access to treatment, not getting access to housing or employment and stuff like that because of their illness.
Say we just take, for example, alcohol. If somebody listening, you know, feels now after listening to you and that's resonating with them, that you know, they're drinking too much and, you know, they're drinking on a regular basis. Who do you go to initially?
Okay. For most people, the first person might be, the ideal is, you know, going to their GP. A GP has the tools, I guess, to initially assess someone and decide whether they need more support or not, or the early intervention, I suppose, is key. But not everyone's willing to go to that step, so they may go to a friend or somebody that they trust, first of all, and that might be a very important step that might assist them in getting to the next stage. I think talking about any problem is the key step. So if you're sitting at home and you're stressed out and you're thinking, oh my God, you know, maybe this is a problem for me, because of stigmatization, you're less likely to actually talk about it. You're less likely to take that step. And I would be really encouraging people, if they are experiencing these problems, to try and break that barrier and start to think about where could you go.
Because surely you know from your work, addictions can they be cured, or is it they can be managed? What would the right word be there?
There's a lot of different ways of looking at it. You could definitely say that for some people they get complete recovery from substance misuse or from any type of addiction. For other people they manage it, and for other people they find it takes a long process of relapse. So some people don't get recovery, unfortunately. Depends.
But having said that, we still want people...
Absolutely.
To look for help if there's a problem.
At any stage, there's always help. It's just deciding what you want to do at that point. And there is so many barriers. you know, the likelihood of, if someone is feeling, you know, feeling that they don't really want to talk to their family or they don't want to talk to their professional, their doctor or something like that, even going to visit the GP might be really difficult. It might be really difficult to say, you know, something I've been on the internet looking at, say, pornography, and I'm really ashamed of this, and I don't want to talk about it. That might be a huge step for someone. If it was, say, gambling and I have a huge amount of losses, it might be very difficult for that person to say, you know, I've lost a lot of money, or I can't stop thinking about the next bet.
Now, just before I say goodbye to you, Robert, there's a conference coming up in November.
There is indeed, yeah. Founders Day is coming up in November. It's a great opportunity, I guess, for professionals, especially to learn more about the services that we're trying to provide in PATS. And obviously, the information is all available on the website on stpats.ie. So
perfect.
You can jump in there and get it.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much, Robert Gill, for telling us about your work here
no
in St. Patrick's Mental Health
thank
Services.
You, Nina.
Thank you.
Take care.
We can't explain. Maybe we're helping each other escape.
Raising awareness for World Mental Health Week. This is Walk In My Shoes Radio. So welcome back. Just to explain, we're going to be live on RT1 very shortly. So we're going to be leaving you with some music for the next few minutes, but we are giving you full permission to turn on to Today with Maura and Dahi on RT1 to see behind the scenes here at Walk In My Shoes. And you'll also be treated to an interview with the CEO here, that's Paul Gilligan. And we'll both be chatting to Brenda Donoghue about why we are so keen for this, this week every year, and why we're so keen to take part. So we leave you with the music, flick on the telly, and we'll see you very shortly. Da 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 da
Mental Health Week. This is Walk in My Shoes Radio, broadcasting live from St. Patrick's Mental Health Services, Dublin 8.
I had a dream. We were sipping whiskey neat, highest floor of the Bowery, and I was high enough. Somewhere along the lines, we stopped seeing. Who's gonna rock you when the sun won't let you sleep? Who's gonna
With the right support, we can all enjoy life. Taking that first step is possible with St. Patrick's Mental Health Services. If you have concerns about your mental health, talk to your GP or call our support line on 01 249 3333. Don't wait to enjoy life again. St. Patrick's Mental Health Services. Empowering recovery.
To start talking about mental health. It can get better. Log on to walkinmyshoes.ie to find out more.
Girl, put your love on me, cause I won't let you down. I won't let you down. I will be singing. Girl, put your love.
Love on me, cause I won't let you down. I won't let you down. We'll be singing.
raising awareness for World Mental Health Week. This is Walk In My Shoes Radio. I hope you enjoyed seeing behind the scenes here on RT's Today Show. My producer, Frank, now wants you to know what makes me happy. So we're going to turn the tables. I'm going to hand it over to Frank.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
How are you getting on?
Good. This is new for me now, being the interviewer turned interviewee.
Well, it's new for me too, being producer turned interviewer.
And thank you for all your help, actually, today as well.
Not
and to
all
Amy
all.
And Priscilla, they were the two I didn't get to mention earlier.
Doing great work. Yeah, so Neil, you've been involved with Walk In My Shoes for a couple of years now. How do you blow the clouds away on your grey days?
My key to trying to stay happy is actually really simple. And for me, I think keeping it simple works. I love fresh air. I like being outdoors. So I try to get a piece of exercise in every day. So be that walking or maybe a little bit of running. And, you know, I'm looking out and the clouds have parted and it's a beautiful evening. And only that I actually have to go across to work in Montrose now this evening, my dream would be to go for a short walk at the Phoenix Park. I think it's the most beautiful place. So I think being in nature is very important. I try to only take one day at a time, Frank.
Right.
I think we can, well, certainly I can sometimes think ahead too far and foresee these obstacles. Listen, my new thing is I'll cross that bridge when I come to it.
Great.
And also when I go to work every day, I end up actually going by two hospitals. Blackrock Clinic and St. Vincent's Hospital. So every day I always say to myself, well, I'm delighted that I'm in great health. I can go and put in a day's work.
Yeah.
So I kind of try and appreciate things as I go.
Yeah, and you were saying to me earlier you really enjoy being busy.
I love being busy, yeah. Maybe it keeps me out of trouble, Frank.
What do you do when you're not busy? What are those, like, other than the walking? It's like, are you into sports? Are you into hobbies? Anything else?
I feel guilty if the weather's very good and I'm sitting in. So, like, really, hand on my heart, the only days that I tend to do absolutely nothing are when the weather's really bad.
Yeah.
And then I actually enjoy them. That gives me a little license to do nothing.
And what is your nothing?
Do you know, it's probably watching telly. Which is awful considering I work in a television station and I end up seeing monitors and TV all day. But I love good TV.
All right.
I love dramas. I like reading too, but I never get enough time anymore because I stay so busy. By the time I get to bed at night, I actually don't have time to read a book.
Okay. So you'd be a bit tired, just a bit like, you know, just get into bed, fall asleep.
Oh, I could be gone on a good day within 5 minutes. Yeah. Mm. And then I have my little plan to keep me going for the next day. I always like a plan.
Yeah.
I like to know what I'm doing. And I love good friends. Like, I don't think 300 friends on Facebook is 300 friends.
No, never.
So I suppose
what's your optimum number of friends then? The ones if you could cut a few, you know, just to keep it down to like
I
that.
Suppose in life, I think you only really have maybe a maximum of five really, really, really good friends who you would do anything for and they'd do anything for you. But at the same time, if somebody ever came to me with a problem or needed help, I know that they wouldn't come unless they really needed it. So I try to be a good friend as much as I can.
Giving back, is it also makes you feel better.
Exactly, yeah. It does. And you get a great sense of satisfaction if you help somebody. So I think, you know, good friends. But my thrill is not going into a department store and buying a really expensive handbag.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
I just think that's... I actually think that's almost like
I've
a sin.
That, I've seen that once. I've seen that once before, yes.
I just... That doesn't sit easy with me at all, you know. Some people don't have enough money to get their dinner tonight. I just think that's so wrong. I would much rather go for a cup of coffee with a great friend and have a bit of a laugh. Or discuss anything we want to between us.
Yeah,
but material things don't bring you happiness. We all know that.
Cool. Tell me this. You were talking to Michael about movies earlier. Are you a Netflix person? Or would you sit down and binge watch a series?
Do you know what? I don't have Netflix, can you believe? But I think I'm traditional in watching TV. I really look forward to, you know, a certain time on a certain day, I'm watching the next episode of a drama I love.
Yeah. Fair City, 8 o'clock, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Sunday.
I used to do extra work in Fair City.
No way.
Keenly eyed people will have noticed me having a fake cup of coffee in the bistro years ago or sitting in McCoy's.
All right, great. Well, that's it's always good to hear. Always good to hear. So anyway, thanks for letting us know, Neil. I think we're going to go to a song now.
Thank you. Raising awareness for World Mental Health Week, this is Walk In My Shoes Radio, and time flies when you're having fun, and how quickly my 2 hours have gone. We want you, though, to still stay with us, of course, until 9 o'clock tonight. There's plenty coming up, but I am giving you permission to dip into RT1 for a few minutes just before 8 this evening to watch live Lotto, and that's where I'm hot-footing it to now. So I just want to say thank you once again to all my guests.